Hey, Jersey. Jersey Drozd.
That's me.
Of leanintoart.com and of...
And Lean Into Art on Twitter. Don't forget that.
Yeah, and Lean Into Art on Twitter. And comicsaregreat.com. And comics are great on Twitter and all that kind of stuff. Many social presences you maintain, sir.
Rob, right now, the only thing that matters is leanintoart.com. I am here for Lean Into Art. I do lots of other things, but right now, they all melt away. So Rob Stenzinger of leanintoart.com, how are you doing? You got to be feeling pretty good.
I do feel kind of awesome about tackling a big creative challenge.
How many weeks has it been?
Oh, now I feel old. But, nope, rejuvenated again. Still feels good. It's been, honestly, since early this year. I was looking through some notes from our event last November, right? 30 classes in 30 days.
No way.
And it was in the final slide of my making video games from comics presentation or workshop. The last slide mentioned there's a teaser for this, making an HTML5 game or make a mini game with HTML and JavaScript, something like that. Some kind of phrasing that's very Revenge of the Jedi, right?
Wow.
Where it took on many forms since then.
And so what we're talking about is this video game workshop that you've been developing for, I guess, 8 months now. And well, let's put it in perspective, and not to make excuses for you, but let's put it in perspective here. A, day job. Yeah. B, other stuff that you're doing. C, ambitious project, right? I defy anybody out there to say like, hey, you got a couple weeks. Can you put together a workshop where you play a video game and through playing that game, you learn how to make a game? Not an easy thing to do. It's an ambitious thing to do. Let's go back to like episode 4 or whatever of this podcast where you said, is it difficult? Is it probably not a good idea? I'll do it. That's seems to be your criteria for taking on anything.
I think there's an ellipses in there somewhere too. and a few long thoughtful walks out on the pier, skipping rocks.
Yeah.
And then I come back and say, I do it. Anyway, enough. My arm's tired from patting myself on the back with all this stuff. I mean, basically, I'm stoked about this workshop. It's called Underwater Tomato Ninja. make a game in HTML5 or something very similar to that.
And, so wait a minute. So in this workshop, you're actually going to learn how to make a game in HTML5?
Yeah. And
whoa.
Yeah.
That changed.
Well, maybe. Well, it's an HTML5 is in a way an abbreviated, slightly hyped way to say using HTML and JavaScript to make a game. It's just saying like that HTML5 wraps a whole bunch of the neat things going on as one big umbrella in the progression of web standards. Dealing with better ways to deal with having improved performance on a web page when you're moving stuff around, right? Mm-hmm. So you have new things like CSS transformations and CSS based.
I was reading about that. So what does that mean? Like a transformation, like so I could have like an oval on the screen in my HTML document,
mm-hmm.
and on mouse over it could morph into a square.
Yeah. So you could do transitions between, I haven't played with doing that specific one, but I'm pretty darn certain you could do it between one of the different possibilities of, so a transition is a way to, it's almost like you have a simplified, so if you ever work in Flash, you got a timeline, right?
Yep. That's what I immediately thought of was Flash, like 2001 that was the kind of stuff we were doing in Flash.
Yeah. And, you could essentially say that timeline has, it instead of just looking at it as frames and keyframes and stuff, you could look at it as percentages along the timeline.
Yep.
And those percentages, each one of them is sort of a CSS command, so a CSS statement. And so you use this progression from 10% to 20%, 20% to 30%, 30% or whatever, however you choose to divide it up. as points along a timeline that then the properties that you're tweening with that transition get tweened in CSS. And the neat thing is I have to look up whether or not those are for sure hardware accelerated, but I believe they are. They for certain are if you're using something called CSS transformations versus transitions, which I may have already transposed those two words. I apologize. Mm-hmm. They are way too similar.
They're similar, and you just finished 8 months of work on a game workshop. You are off the hook tonight, my friend. You can make as many mistakes and as many flubs as you want to. I know I'm treading dangerously close to qualifying a statement here, but
no, there's we're still on our policy of disclaimers be damned,
yes,
or be darned, or whichever.
So wait a minute, when you say hardware, I know 2% of the people listening care about this, but I care about this. When you say hardware acceleration, you're not talking about processor usage.
Yeah, well, I think it's relegated to the graphics processor, right?
Oh, okay.
So GPU, right? Because
that was one of the big beefs with Flash, though, was like if you had like a big heavy duty animation, it would slow down your whole system running the animation in your browser, right?
Yeah, and so in recent times, Flash actually has improved in that regard as well. But then, it's a complex ecosystem with a lot of agendas. So the future of Adobe having to do with, let's see, that's a lot of platform politics. I have a lot of beliefs on platform politics, but maybe that's better set aside for another time.
Oh, I was hoping to get you into those, your granola and your socks and sandals and get you all mad and talk about the man.
I'm not mad at the man. I don't like how platforms can be mismanaged for, I think, reasons that have nothing to do with natural problems the platforms are being built to solve. They have to do with the business model surrounding the platform, mm-hmm. and it becomes parasitic on the audience that is trying to spread the platform, which is frustrating. So in other words, so if there was a time in Flash when you had ActionScript 2.0 and you could do many different things, and culturally, there was a lot of hubbub around, well, it's not a real programming language. You're not using strict types and all this stuff. It's kind of stuff that JavaScript gets saddled with from people who have different backgrounds in their computing experience, which gives them different beliefs where they can pass judgments that really aren't totally fair on a given platform and cast aspersions on it. So you've got that going on for some angle of politics. And then you also have Adobe saying, well, we want to do something better and we're saddled with all this old stuff. How do we do that? And some of that's really, that is natural. You do hit those puzzles where you're building something. And so like you could do this with, you're building a business or a game and you're like, I want to do the new thing and the old thing's weighing you down. And well, okay, well, you have to pick a way to deal with that. And so some companies like Apple say, guess what? We're shedding the old thing mercilessly. Mm-hmm. And it's done. And now we don't have to worry about it.
It always, I mean, I don't have a background in software engineering or coding, but it seemed like it was a longer transition than like just like a shuttering of OS 9. Because it felt like the first two versions, or was it three versions of OS 10, still had classic mode. And I remember relying on that heavily for a lot of my apps that hadn't been updated to OS 10 yet. And it felt like by the time they finally got rid of classic mode altogether, all of my apps had been caught up. So it seemed like there was a pretty smooth transition. But I remember people saying like, oh, it was so sudden that they just turned their back on OS 9. It didn't feel that sudden to me, but maybe I'm just a fanboy. I don't know.
And exactly. And so so you may fall into that sweet spot where they are catering to you well enough and you have been forewarned. And perhaps even assisted to move from what was the old strategy to the new one.
My 1997 CD-ROMs don't work anymore, though.
No.
I want to play Sam and Max.
And, oh my gosh, yeah, exactly. I have a lot of old games that I don't know what to do with right now, but.
Sorry, I'm leading you down some divergent paths. I don't know if this has anything to do with
I'm cool
topic.
With that. We have an emergent conversation. I'm working on tying it back to the other one.
Okay.
So, let's see. So you have different platforms and they have different life cycles. And some of that I think is legitimate. And other parts to me seem baloney, because people will throw out a reason that isn't true as like, well, we'll never move ActionScript 2 forward because we just couldn't. We could never make it match the performance of, you know, ActionScript 3, blah, 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 with a lot of assertions based on these cultural biases between strictly typed languages and dynamically typed languages. And it's, and in other words, ActionScript 3 is so much better, we could never, ever make ActionScript 2 work that way, which honestly they could if they wanted to, right? Mm. But they don't want to. And so they moved on. And then they had this new split with the whole, like, they do have Flash that is one of the niches that I think it's going to probably succeed for another few years is they're trying to have Flash be another, like, first-tier game development platform. So you could publish things to PS3, the Wii, Xbox, and all that stuff.
So that's how they're repositioning Flash in a post Flash on the web world.
And they're still doing that same thing. So now the really cool and the really awesome stuff in Flash is only available to the people working in this, and I haven't kept up with it. So but on the sidelines I still watch a little bit. And anyway, so if you're, and it has to do with the new Flash 3D stage or stage 3D or whatever. And when they could provide that acceleration to the old stuff, which relates to this HTML thing, where I think in years to come, in another year or two, it won't be that big of a deal if you're building a game in HTML and you're changing the XY, essentially the CSS top and the CSS left of a DOM element to move it along the screen or to shoot it as a projectile at bricks or whatever you're doing in your game. It's going to perform just as fast as if you were doing a CSS 3D transformation. But that's not the case today. So if you want the speed, you've got to do the CSS 3D transformation, which is just another little thing to learn in CSS.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things, one of the many things in the workshop. I tied it back.
it's in I'm blanking on the name again. Ninja Tomato.
Underwater Tomato Ninja.
Underwater Tomato Ninja. I will remember this.
You got to play the game.
Oh, it's right here in front of me too. Yeah, I launched the game while we were talking on Skype, but then the music launched right away and I was like, oh, I'll have to do this later. Underwater Tomato Ninja. Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, it's using HTML5 for music, for, you know.
That's crazy.
Everything.
You do know that HTML5 hasn't been, you know, what do they call it? Fully adopted by the...
Ratified by the founding fathers.
Yes, of the W3C or whatever. and it's never going to be a standard. I don't know if you know this, Rob, but I really think that we got to go to proprietary platforms to develop our apps and software. The open web is not the future.
There, let's see.
By the way, children are possessions, and women should be should speak only when spoken to.
Pure, you're just spouting hate now.
While I'm at it, you know.
While you're, no, I know. I was trying to, yeah, think like, how could I reach an olive branch out without trying to swing it?
No, we've had this discussion off mic. I think.
Oh, I know. It's true. Like, there is that kind of doubt, and you know. FUD thrown around with these standards, but it's not these things are evolving in a different way than they have in the past decade. So browsers are competing more based on how well they work with the standard versus how much they do in unique cool things, more so than they used to. They still do it, and that's partially how, like, the new features come up in a variety of ways. Sometimes by the standards committees, but other times by development teams at browser, you know, the browser makers like Google and Apple and Microsoft. And
in my own very, very limited way, I've come across this when I'm modifying CSS files for websites that I'm of my own. I don't do this for other people because I'm not that good. But I'll notice that there's like some customizations for like certain kinds of drop shadows. Like, okay, here's the Internet Explorer code you have to drop in. Here's the WebKit code. Here's the Mozilla code that you have to drop in order to make this drop shadow actually behave right?
Yes.
So I don't know if this is interesting to anybody, but yes, we're going to talk a little bit about gamification, talking about this.
I'm going to have a lonely workshop if that's the case, but
no,
I'm going to send you a link just because I'm trying to stir some trouble here.
Okay, cool.
You're talking about, this is one of one of the possible exercises in this workshop, because the workshop itself is a game. It's a game scenario where,
what is this?
Essentially, I will be playing the what I'm calling the librarian for this mega corp game company.
Oh, Rob, did you make this? This is amazing.
Yeah, that's the star. I made all the art and sound for the game, and this exercise thing I made too, which it helps you explore CSS 3D transformation. Well,
let me describe it for the listeners, because I know how annoying it is to hear somebody say like, "This is incredible," and like, what is he looking at? So, okay, we're going to put this in the show notes, right?
Cool.
You sent me it's a web page and it loads, and there's a picture of your ninja, and there are a set of parameters underneath, a slider. There's an X, Y, and Z slider, and if I move the X slider back and forth, it moves the ninja forward and backward. Y slider, up and down. Z slider, you know, three dimensions, closer and farther away, right? And then there's a rotate X, Y, and Z axis. Origin and perspective. I can transform origin X percent, Y percent, and then perspective. I can change the perspective on this guy. And here's where it gets crazy. Underneath all this, whenever I make these changes, it automatically updates the CSS so I can copy and paste the CSS.
Mm-hmm.
WebKit perspective 9.41 container CSS. WebKit transform origin Y 50%. This is awesome, Rob. All you do is move the slider and it updates the CSS automatically, so I can just copy and paste it.
Yeah, this is actually, I built this tool to be able to figure out how I can make the ninja like fall over injured, right, in the game.
With one sprite.
What's that?
But using only one sprite.
Exactly. I'm using one sprite. I did a few other tricks too, where I'm doing something with the sprite similar to what I did in Guitar Fretter. It's trying to get the most out of simple art assets, where basically, you know, using techniques that I call it breathing and wobbling.
Yeah.
And
I'm playing with it right now, and it's totally, I totally get it. Yeah, this creates like sort of like you could have the character rotate on the x-axis, right, so that they flip over sideways. Oh, wait, no, I want the y-axis. I don't want the z-axis. I don't remember. Oh, z-axis. Anyway, so I can have them tumble, and then I can use the perspective slider to make them kind of stretch and bounce when they hit the ground without actually animating anything.
Exactly.
And doing this all in CSS.
Yeah.
This is really cool.
Yeah, so what I'm trying to do is not just, this was part of why it was this daunting puzzle to face, is that there's many interesting slices through the adventure of making a game like that, that could make many workshops, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I decided to do is instead of trying to have a fully prescriptive path through this, I have a story that sets us up and gets us all into, we have the game, we all have the code, and then we will play through this game that helps facilitate us exploring this game and changing it.
Wow.
And I think I'll hold a few other details still. I don't know.
So, in other words, people have to come to Kids Read Comics in Ann Arbor, Michigan, July 7th and 8th.
And this does relate to that my other workshop too, which is about it's not a trilogy, it's a duogy or bicycle
two-parter.
Yeah. Where it goes from, making video games from your comics, where you're trying to find a way to give context to a game experience, which one of the ways to think of a game, it's a series of interesting choices, right? And the narrative is less about you experiencing a storyteller's voice about a single chain of causality. It's more the storyteller's framing it up and maybe giving you little smaller lengths of chain in there where maybe there's some cut story or scenes that branch a little bit here and there. But it's different than a comic, but it shares a lot of DNA for on the storytelling side of things that can help you out. And that's what that first workshop does, is focus mostly on the game design. And then this one is about, you could take this code base, and I've reused some code, but not that much. And then it'll probably eventually get refactored out of the project. But I've open sourced all the code and all the art and the sound. And I mean, and the code is under it's under the MIT license, and then the art and the sound and the music is under the Creative Commons license. So share alike, not for profit, et cetera.
Non-commercial share alike. Really neat. And there's several different kinds of sprites to choose from just in this thing that you, look at
that. And that's a taste of some of the sprites that are available. And I think there's like 100 some sprites in the overall. Yeah, I wasn't sitting on my tail for 8 months. I was doing a lot.
Wow. Holy moly, dude. Well, this will be linked in the show notes. People got to play around with this. This is super cool. And man, oh man, I am so stoked for this workshop. Oh. So, you thought hard about, I'm going to try to frame up this transition into another part of the discussion, but this is going to build largely on what you've just been talking about, I hope, unless I'm an idiot. Which is entirely possible. Gamification gets a bad rap. It gets a bad rap because, and we've talked about this before, a bunch of snake oil salesmen come in, carpetbaggers, they smell greenbacks when they hear a word getting passed around a lot, and they're like, I do that. And, you know, or somebody gets a bright idea and it works for one thing, and then every problem becomes a nail because they got a hammer, that old idea, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, first of all, I mean, it's a gimme to say, well, let's do a workshop where you learn how to make games by playing games, right? Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, I'm wondering if you could give us a sort of making a case for gamification. Let's, carpetbaggers aside, right? What use does this kind of thing have, like in an abstract sense, gamifying things? And hopefully by making it abstract, people can understand that there might be applications for what they're doing. And where this thing can fall on it, rather than using specific use cases. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So gamifying is essentially trying to, and I'm just saying we have to accept the term. Like I've been really crossing my fingers, hoping a new term would overtake it, because it seems like kind of a, we could have come up with a better word for this. And I'm just being a word snob, saying, darn it, I love this, the things that this concept represents when they're used well. And I'll totally justify in a second. But I just had to give a little shrug, but say, I guess I accept this word. Kind of like, well, okay, you're one of the family now. All right. I wouldn't have picked you to marry my sister, but... But you're here.
Comics, so, gamification. Comics, same damn thing. You know, we're saddled with a very non-descriptive word for the medium that I love more than anything. You know,
interesting.
So,
yeah, and it has some cultural baggage as well.
Yeah, it does. It really does. So, but for better or worse, we're stuck with it. And anyway, but so yeah, that's part of probably what leaves a bad taste in some people's mouths when you start saying the word gamification.
Yeah, it's not leading with your best foot forward when you're using a imification Homer Simpson sounding word.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it? It totally sounds like that, like saxophone.
Yeah, it's very... I used to laugh, like cried at that dang saxophone moment. Anyway, talking into the stupid instrument. Anyway. Oh, Simpsons. Anyway.
That was Mona Lisa season 2.
Yeah. The old classic stuff.
Oh, I don't know if it was season 2. I'm kidding. Anyway, sorry.
So why would you want to do this thing? So yeah. It frames up what you're wanting to share with people, because you have a story, you have a service, you have a thing that you are already providing, and adding a game or a playful layer on top of it it gives you a new perspective to provide new ways to connect your audience to what you're providing. And so it's a neat frame of mind. Like that alone, I think is valuable. Like taking that fresh look at what you're doing and why people come to use it or read it or whatever, buy it, eat it, that whatever the thing you're doing is, and having that playful perspective will, and thinking about why would people want to play related to it and how can that serve them well and how could that serve you well? Because I think that's, then all of a sudden you fall right into that pit. And then that's where the snake oil, you know, gentlemen and ladies will just say, all right, we am out of here. Yeah. I heard I can get people to interact with what I'm doing, you know, more often and for longer.
Yeah.
And people are just numbers. So see you guys.
Yeah. I also wonder if some people get kind of bristly about it because playfulness comes with a relinquishing of control. You know, it's like you're accepting the fact that the audience or the users have a say in what this thing ultimately means. That's the definition of a game, is that everybody's a participant in the thing. And we've told many stories on this show, or at least I've told many stories on this show about classroom experiences where I let go of the class and let it turn into what it wants to turn into, and then be like, you know, in the background being a guide rather than saying, I'm in control of this room, shut up, sit down, be a good boy. I wonder if that's part of the reason some people get a little bit, you know, uncomfortable around the idea.
I could easily see that being one of the cultures, one of those perspectives that would bristle at gamification, because it has to do with, I think it's not just relinquishing control, because you're looking for certain patterns too. So you're trying to do this thing where you're letting go, but you're trying to anticipate, and you may anticipate wrong. Like for instance, when you gamify, you try to come up with, well, understanding what you're providing, why people want to consume and all that kind of stuff, and finding interesting, you know, playful ways to highlight those things. And let's see. You may choose wrong at first. So just like the game master, we've brought up Dungeons and Dragons before. Yeah, yeah. This is absolutely in my mindset. Like I am a user experience designer that's what I typically get paid for, but you know, I wear different hats over the years. I mean, I've, you know, whatever, a lot of UI things, but coding, and I've actually been paid to help to consult on gamification projects too. And so the mindset that I feel helps keep everyone honest and not just thinking of their users as numbers and just missing the playful point is to try to be a game master or a host, right? You get that mindset of like, well, I've written an adventure for you. And I'm going to pay attention, obviously. I'm here still. I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. I set up the adventure and I'm going to help facilitate the adventure. And I might be in the position where you didn't pick the dang boat. And I wrote everything about the boat and crossing the water and going to the other, you know, side and the problems that happen on the way.
Yep.
And you didn't even pick the dang boat.
Yeah. He didn't pick the boat. What are we going to do? He didn't pick the boat.
And guess what you're going to do? You're going to be a host. You're going to look at, well, what are they doing? And where do they want to go? And then you're going to start writing your adventure surrounding that. And so the adventure with gamification, I think, is you provide these pathways, which I think are a lot like adventures, through things that you could look at as, well, people who are just starting to learn the environment. Or, and it depends on how deep the game is, right? So some things could be really, really gamified because, well, they're about observing behaviors in a game. So, boy, that's an easy match. And yeah. you can do a lot of, have a lot of depth there without feeling tacked on. And I think things can feel artificial and tacked on when you haven't been considering the users or or their the players or the motivations, however you want to say it. I don't think user is a bad word, by the way, right?
Yeah.
Some UX purists are like, user is a four letter word. You know what? I don't know. Whatever.
Really?
Yeah, it's
I would think movies like Tron would make like the word user awesome because the users are like the gods in Tron.
Exactly. And that's where these words and it's helpful to take them with a grain of salt and step back, because even that has a bunch of baggage associated with it. But then if you look at it objectively, there's a lot of, you know, pretty wonderful things about there, because you're really just you're referring to people that want to interact with that thing that you built.
People what want to interact with your stuff.
Exactly. That rocks. I like that. That's I am going to re-listen to this podcast and I'm going to wear that accent when I hear another UX.
I just wrote it down as an acronym. It's PWWTIWYS. There you go. Now, I'll use that in my next TEDx talk. People what want to interact with your stuff. You got to say it like Dr. Phil or Bill Clinton, though.
Love it. It's going to be the new WYSIWYG. Yep. What you see is what you get. People what want to interact with your stuff. So, yeah. That perspective, facing it as a host and thinking, well, how can I be a good host? How can I respond to what's going on? And that's exciting to me. And that's there you go. That mindset when you're doing something for an audience is a useful mindset.
Can I tell you something exciting? This is kind of slightly divergent, but it's where I want to head next. In a way, I just want to get your take on something. So we talked off mic about a new gig that I got lined up, a teaching gig. And part of that teaching gig, I forgot to mention this when we were talking about earlier, is I get to do possibly develop some kind of comics workshop or comics teaching materials with an improv group. Yeah, right.
No way.
I know. But they said like, oh, we have an improv group that does this kind of thing, and they do it like it's like an improv class. Is there any crossover with comics? I'm like, are you kidding me?
What the heck?
Yeah.
This is one of those things where my first reaction, it was totally genuine. I'm like, that is awesome. And then now I'm disgusted in Ann Arbor, where I'm like, what's going on? where's my Ann Arbor? You know what I mean? Like, what do you guys, how does that work?
Well, part of it is okay. So I got a completely like side note on this, because I think this is actually an interesting question. This gig I got is, it's a new artist in residency, and I think I can actually say what it's about because the contract's in the mail. You know, I haven't signed it, but they told me to mark my calendar in ink, so it's a done deal. I'm going to be the artist in residence for this sort of in residence education program at the University of Michigan. The kind of deal where you stay in the dorms and like you just live in this kind of like commune kind of thing and take a whole bunch of different kinds of classes. And it's an arts program, which is like an in residency thing. They're giving me, you know, or they're having me come in to do some teaching for them and do some artist in residency kind of stuff. But you know how I got the gig? I've been teaching for 6 years in Ann Arbor, and it turns out that the son of one of the guys at the University of Michigan who works in this program, that his son took my class. He came to pick up his son before I was done one day, saw me in action, said, this guy is really good. And so then he asked for my card. I thought nothing of it. I gave him the card. 2 years later, I get a call. Hey, there's this opportunity. Would you like to be a part of this thing? So yeah, it's partially like what's in the water in Ann Arbor. And I totally love, you know, kind of leading with that and like
landing this kind of you made this opportunity happen too. I wanted to play with that idea. Part of me is like, you know what? I mean, clearly the Ann Arbor is this, it's a cool place.
It is a cool place.
And I have a lot of respect for it. And I'm just saying that's awesome.
Yeah.
And
but the
you've been working your tail off.
Oh, and, yeah. That's what can't. And I mean, you know, I don't want to turn into that guy who just goes like, well, if you just work hard and follow your dreams, things will happen. But part of it is just focusing on the thing that you are passionate about and then waiting for the opportunities to pop up. And it's not about sitting on your hands, because I've been busting my butt doing lots and lots of free work to get my name out there, to get noticed. You know, so yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of both. Anyway, but that's a side, that's a side thing. What's really interesting to me is that the idea of working with an improv group and improvisation as a storytelling thing. You know, it's like this whole thing about, it's like, I really want to, you got me excited about the idea of, like, could I teach a comics course that is entirely a game? Entirely. Not gamified, but entirely a game where, like a dungeon master, right? It's like, we're when I was doing Palladium Heroes Unlimited as a kid, the thing that really set me off and set my mind buzzing was, this is cooperative storytelling. Everybody's throwing in and changing things around. And when you're younger or when you're green, you think storytelling is this very rigid, regimented, structured thing where, well, I'm going to write chapter one today, and tomorrow I'm going to write chapter two. And yes, I have the ending in mind. Of course I have the ending in mind. I had the ending in mind when I wrote the outline. That's not how it really works for me so much, at least not anymore. You know, the thing is slowly taking shape over subsequent draft and subsequent draft, and things go in really weird directions. When I finish this new front book, I'll share like whole different divergent paths the story took, where I was writing extended scenes that, it's not like it's a deleted scene. It's like, this scene took the story in a completely different place and I didn't want to go there. So I backed up and started from page two again. Anyway, so the point is that the act of creativity is itself improvisation, but the improvisation is happening behind the scenes. It's not happening on stage, right? Mm. That is interesting to me. And that kind of leads, it goes back to this gamifying thing where being the host, being the game master, means that you have to improvise. So let's go back to your earlier example of,
and there you go. That's my hack. Like that as far as the gamifying, I'm not trying to own this or whatever, but like that, the secret is make it a game. That's it. I think there is some value to be had in adding game elements. And this is where we talked about this in the podcast about when I turned a corner and working on this workshop, where I didn't, I felt like those added on observations and achievements and elements were getting in the way. And I thought, that's baloney. We're making a game. And then I thought, and once in a while, I actually am social, and I don't just work on stuff in creative projects in my basement while my wife and daughter sleep. And anyway,
you do look a little like Laszlo Holyfield from Real Genius. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie.
Oh no, is he the dude that won?
He's the guy who made stuff, those machines to sign the enter as many times as you like lottery contest.
I think he had a beard in the beginning, right?
He did.
That's funny. I've lived out his story arc a little bit.
Yep. You have. Yeah. That's awesome. I got to make a Real Genius reference. I'm adding that to the show notes. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, Rob. Sorry.
No, that rocks. So there was a point where I turned a corner from saying that this isn't enough. And one of the parts of it had to do with getting out and stepping away from the project or whatever. And I think that's a huge, interesting topic too, is when you stop, being your head against a problem and get some perspective. Yeah. But some friends, we try to get together every second Saturday, right, to play board games, right? And I'm just going to just throw a shout out, because maybe I will. I think it's good to spread these things. So second Saturdays for board games. There you go. First Fridays for video games.
There you go.
So make them lean into our holidays. And what's for comics? Which days?
I wish it was Thursday, Friday. Let's see. When do I get to work on comics?
Mega Mondays.
Get back to me after Kids Read Comics. No, right now, every day is Kids Read Comics for me. So if we were saying, you know, for the general public, what's the holiday? What's the comic Sabbath, right?
The monthly. Yeah, exactly. Or weekly, whatever. I mean, so we,
and Wednesdays is comic.
Wednesdays. There you go.
Has to be, because that's historically, let's think of North American comics culture. Wednesdays when new comics come out, if you go to the direct market books.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Wednesday's the best day to update your comic of the week, because that's when everybody's checking the internet in the morning. Wednesday's Comics Day.
Okay, so there we go. We solved a bunch of holidays. That's awesome. And getting out to Second Saturday, I oh gosh, we could link to this place because this is one that we didn't do at someone's house. We met at was it Fantasy Flight Games? That's it's wild. Like I just discovered this recently. There is a famous board game development company in the Minneapolis area, right? They actually have a storefront that is sort of like a mini convention hall / game store, right? That essentially you could just go there and play games.
Fantasy Flight Games. Is that right?
Yeah. And so
nice looking site.
What's that?
It's a nice looking site.
Oh yeah. They've got a lot of cool games too. Like recently, what is it? The Mansions of Madness or something is the is a game that some friends and I have been playing, and it's Cthulhu based, and what's neat, it's very modular, and you assemble and it's got the interesting thing where all the players except one are playing cooperatively, and that's interesting, and then I like it when it's all of you against the game. And essentially the game designers. Interesting dynamic that's different than the normal competitive one when you're sitting in a board game or a card game. And of course, I love it when games are modular too. So I love like HeroScape also. So I'm just throwing all sorts of stuff out.
I'm capturing all this.
Yeah, modular games that basically let you dabble at game design have a big warm spot in my heart. And anyway, so playing this, like I noticed, like we went through a couple of different games that day. I think we played, it's a card game called like, I don't know, Race for Outer Space or something like that. And it has to do with, you know, occupying planets and defending them and all this kind of stuff. But it's all a card game and it has a certain flow to it. And I went, wait a minute. And I thought about how, you know, games will have like either like a spatial traversal progression, like you're in Metroid or you're in Mario and you're going through like levels through that are a physical traversal versus sort of a stages of the evolution of the game, which could occur every turn or it could be this overarching thing. And I thought, what if I structured the workshop in a similar manner, right? So you had essentially a map that had something to do, and then you give a story reason for the map, and then you know you kind of work this out. So that's where I came up with the whole story of there's this slightly dystopian but also cartoony and silly. There's a game because I think of it as like some kind of dystopian like anime based. Crazy corporation from classic anime that would have a building as big as a planet practically and mixed with WarioWare. Right. And like, that's the basis of their business. Right. So they make a lot of little silly games and whatnot. And essentially I, as the facilitator, I'm playing their librarian. They have me meet new recruits. And so the people that come to the class are new recruits, and we are going to, you know, they have us, you know, like the new recruits, we test you by, you know, they're having trouble with this game, Underwater Tomato Ninja, right? And we need to go look at it in different ways. And so the class is going to choose like where they go and whatnot. And then they earn cards as we go and whatnot. And at the end, I'm going to just reveal it all, whatever. In the end, anyone who gets who has scored can put their name in the game, and that version is getting published.
Oh, wow.
So publishing that to the website. So they'll have a URL where, and it's their name. It's just initials and stuff. So, you know, we're dealing
with like a leaderboard, like the old arcade leaderboard.
Bam. It's a leaderboard. One of the original meta games, right?
Yep.
Where you, it wasn't just about, you know, playing whatever, right? Street Fighter.
Beating the game and peeing on the tree afterwards.
It's, yes, without the urine smell.
Well, you didn't go to the video game place I went to.
Well,
but But yeah, no, I mean, there was a Bob's Burgers episode recently where that was the plot, was all the extreme lengths he would go to get his arch enemy's name off of the top score of the leaderboard, right?
Cool.
Powerful
and
stuff.
Hey, one more. Why not? The book Ready Player One, a leaderboard factors in heavily to that. Awesome book.
Eli Nyberger highly recommends it, and of Ulotricus on the Twitters. He's always on Comics Are Great, and usually whenever he's on, I get a ton of responses from people either saying, that guy's smart, I like what he says, or I hate that guy, he says things that make me scared, you know. He's a very polarizing figure, and I've warned him that he's becoming kind of a celebrity in the comics world, and he just shakes it off. But yeah, he really loves the book and read it recently. She said it was pretty fun, so...
I know the couple times I've been on Comics Are Great, I've been, I was super excited the second time I was on because well, obviously I enjoy talking with you, Jersey, but had the pleasure of also having Eli present.
You can say it. It's more fun to talk to Eli. I won't get hurt.
It was exciting. It's exciting. It's like, jeez.
Okay. So I got Eli entered in for the show notes as well. But yeah, Ready Player One, I also have heard that it is, it's just dripping with 80s references. So
yes.
Yeah.
Unapologetically.
Yeah. I mean, you can spill what the premise of it is for those who haven't heard of it. I mean, it's about a guy who makes like some kind of crazy puzzle. It's a game, but it's like a puzzle that you have to know like really, really 80s minutia in order to solve some of the puzzles.
Well, it's partially that. It reminds me of classic game design as well. So the premise is there's a, and this is like back of the book kind of thing that frames it up. So the world's wealthiest man essentially helped found this giant online environment that pretty much everyone on Earth partakes in because they made the game system, you know, free. Everyone can, you could pay for more fancy stuff. But anyway, but the gist of it, the company has ways to make money, but they've spread this game throughout the world. It's incredibly popular. And this guy is alone in the world. He's the richest man, but no family, no heirs, and he dies. But he planned ahead and he essentially wrote a very challenging quest into his game that if you win that quest, you get his fortune.
Ah, there we go.
So, yeah. And, but okay, then it's getting into the game design aspect. Some games are built on theories that, well, they're very familiar to people. And they're meant to be. They're meant to reach out to what you already know and stretch it just a little bit. And so you feel challenged and engaged. Mm-hmm. So other games are obtuse. And it's kind of like you can have a game master that's hosting, you know, an adventure that really wants to see everyone have fun. You could also have the ones that want you to guess what the heck they're thinking.
Yeah.
And they will punish the heck out of you if you don't guess what the heck they're thinking.
Yep.
Right? Like you didn't bring your 10-foot pole with the mirror on it and check for traps or whatever, and you're full of poison arrows and falling to 100 feet to your death.
So let me guess, you were the former game master.
Yeah.
Not when you were younger, though.
I would always the fun guy. You know, almost. To a flaw. Like I had to come up the learning curve to understand like challenges are useful and important.
Yeah.
Versus like you killed one dude, now you're rich. And you know, a dude being a kobold or a goblin or some lame creature, but like happened to be, you know, the janitor for the dragon's, you know, whatever. Yeah. Hut. Dragon Hunt. Anyway, I learned that it's you know, keeping people interested means it has to have some difficulty. But there's those that are really obtuse. which is some classic games were just really, really obtuse. Anyway.
But yeah, yeah. So, you know what, Rob, we are coming up on an hour already.
Yeah, I think, well, I think we covered our topic pretty well.
Did we? Cause I mean, this is the most animated and excited I've seen you in some time. And I'm guessing part of it has to do with beating that Hydra of that game where you cut off one head and so on.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I want to dog ear this for future discussion. We had some discussion off mic, which related to this.
Oh.
What?
The follow-up.
I wanted to address the follow-up real quick.
Yeah.
Okay. But also storytelling and not, you know, you're going to talk about storytelling, guys? Really? It's episode 40 and you're getting into storytelling? No. Storytelling from a meta sense. We had some interesting thoughts recently and observations on the popularity of storytelling in so many different fields right now. And I want to back out 1,000 feet and look at it and go, this is why. Okay, so you did a workshop for Lean Into Art called Storytelling to Make Your Comics UI Awesome, which is, for the most part, a class that teaches you how, if you know how to tell a story, you understand UI design. The principles are the same. I want to back out and say this is why it's important to understand what we understand about storytelling because of the cross disciplines. Does that sound like a discussion you would be interested in participating in?
I can't tell you why or how, but I feel like we've crossed the line and now I'm out. No,
I know.
That sounds awesome. I love it. Like, yeah, you want to stick Legos in the Play-Doh? Totally for it.
All right. So we're going to do some actual responding to listeners because we do get responses from listeners and we have fallen woefully behind in getting back to them on the show. I'll let you take this one, Rob. Field it because you are just on fire today.
It's a combination between, it's like it's being isolated for and so intense for so long. Anyway, yeah, it's anyone can do it. So back in what was it, episode I have this up in my browser. 32. We had the LeahCast 5 tips. And it was cool. We got a few different follow-ups from this one, but one to focus on for today, where Jersey walked us through essentially how cartoons and having a really efficient storytelling model can they convey a lot of different things, and they demonstrate a lot of interesting things that are counter to some of the pop culture observations of them. Right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that led to this piece of feedback from Tina Burke. And she goes, "Hi, Jersey and Rob. I'm so happy to have stumbled across your network of podcasts. I'm gradually making my way through them. Great stuff. Lots of food for thought. My work tends to be aimed at the younger crowd, around 3 to 5 year olds. So I'm always interested to learn more about that age range. Rob, does your wife have a blog or any online presence where she shares some of her insight? Alternatively, any good books or sites she or either of you could recommend on storytelling for younger kids would be much appreciated. Thanks, guys, and keep up the awesome work."
Two things. One, thank you, Tina. It's always nice to hear that somebody actually enjoys hearing me talk about something. And I know that, you know, my peanut butter only goes good with Rob's chocolate. otherwise it's just like that dry organic peanut butter where the oil goes all over the top and then it just turns into like crust on the bottom. Anyway, two, we got to get Kate on here. Why haven't we had Kate on here for a discussion on this topic?
Good question. And I have been exploring that question also, and yeah, she's up for it. So cool. I think we could get her to delve into this a bit more.
Let's do this. Yeah, we need to get Kate on here for that because this is, the more I thought about it, the more I realized that, you know, my background on working with kids really kind of begins around 8 years old and on. I don't have much experience younger than that. So,
but Kate, yeah, that's her bailiwick is that age range.
Yeah.
She's done work in psychology for all ages, honestly. But but huge focus on the younger age range and early childhood development. So, yeah, and anyways, I initially respond saying that I will go find out more. But yeah, Kate and I, we haven't been updating it in a while, but Kate has some cool articles out there still at babieslovecomics.com. And, you know, it's on a de facto hiatus. You know, we're both busy with other things and whatnot, but there are some interesting articles out there. And Kate followed up specifically when I reached out to her via email. So actually, Kate mentions, hi, happy to help out. My two favorite resources are The Right Start, a guide to nurturing writing at every stage from scribbling to forming letters and writing stories, which we have an Amazon, a link to that book. And another book called The Creative Family, How to Encourage Imagination and Nurture Family Connections. And she mentioned to me anecdotally that a couple of things that she has a big interest recently. Like she's been stumbling across sort of early childhood teaching methods that that honestly relate to storytelling specifically, and how, and she wants to explore both the Waldorf method further and the Montessori method. And she's got a couple of books dog-eared to delve into that further. And she wants to, so I think she probably want to do some of her research before we chat with her, but we can follow up on that one off mic and whatnot. But let's see.
Well, this is something you guys are dealing with right now because your daughter is what, she's two and a half?
She is two and a half.
Two and a half. So, I mean, you were telling me anecdotes about going to the beach. And actually, yeah, this was in the class she taught for Lean Into Art.
Yeah.
Who needs art anyway?
Yep. And so, yeah, some of the photos she had from that were from some sessions that she did. Like, well, Kate, one of her strengths is she's a pretty amazing planner, and she plans this giant camping trip every year. And she actually, and she plans activities for all the kids also. And she had one of the activities was the kids were painting rocks on a beach. And this beach is just full of rocks. And then telling stories and taking pictures of the rocks putting googly eyes on them and all that stuff. So as soon as, you know, these interestingly painted rocks, which may already look like something, well, if it, that like has a, like that, that's, anthropomorphic, right?
Yeah.
Adding googly eyes, well, bam, now they for sure, you know, look like some kind of subjects of some characters, right? Of a Jim Henson story.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, they, yeah, the kids were telling stories about their rocks and you know, essentially playing like a
pretend.
Like playing pretend with, like, as if they were any kind of like dolls or action figures or whatever.
And obviously doing word associations with, well, this rock is shaped like this. So, like, I run into this when I work with you know, as young as 7 years old. It's like, I'll draw a pointy shape. I'm like, is this shape a nice shape or a mean shape? Oh, it's mean. Well, I didn't say that. Why do you say that? Because it's pointy. Mm-hmm. So pointy things are mean? That's a weird idea, you know, that kind of thing. You're doing that with a three-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
Shape, size, line, and color. So even little kids do this stuff.
They do. And it's really, it is awesome to see. And it's the exercises that we're doing or that you do all the time in your classroom environments. I mean, I could see them in various forms easily reaching an even broader age range than they already do.
Interesting.
I'm an expert on the topic, but I've observed this, you know, just. You know, I've observed you teaching, and I have observed Kate teaching. So, there you go.
Oh well, you know what? I cannot wait for Kids Read Comics to be over. Not because I'm stressed out about the event, but because I am just champing at the bit to dive into designing a Comics Workshop that is itself a game. I've already started getting some ideas just from talking to you today.
Cool. Well,
and I mean, really taking it beyond the whole, like, here's bonus unicorn points, here's the leaderboard, but actually make the entire activity itself a game. Oh, God, I think that's really interesting.
Cool. So, yeah. Well, we'll be, as we were talking off mic or whatnot, we'll be scheduling the trial runs of my workshop here.
Yeah.
Might get some more ideas from that. Or it may just scare you off. You might just say, oh man.
I'm in a privileged place because I get the first dry run of this thing. So exciting. So, okay. Well, you know, we should take this moment or this opportunity to thank Tina one more time, Tina Burke. She didn't give a web credit, did she?
I think she's Tina Burke, all one word on Twitter. TinaBurke.
Very cool. Okay.
Because that's how she responded.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Tina, for the kind words and for the great question. And yes, you have inspired getting Kate on the show. And then I should say, this is where we could do a little housekeeping stuff. I'm not going to beg for iTunes reviews this week. You know what I'm going to do, though? I'm going to say, hey, guess what? Kidsreadcomics.org. I've got a few. I need to write an unofficial FAQ and post it someplace because I've been fielding a lot of weird questions about the show. I want to address a few things. First of all, yes, Rob is going to be there. That's why you should come. Forget about everything else I'm about to say. But, you know, people ask, well, is it okay if I'm a grown-up and I come to the show? I don't see why not. You know, there's things like the show called Adventure Time. There's SpongeBob SquarePants. There's My Little Pony Friendship is Magic. These are all things that kids and adults enjoy. And why do they enjoy them? Because they're awesome. That's what we try to do with Kids Read Comics. This is not a no adults allowed zone. This is not some place where it's going to be double dare, obstacle course, stick your finger up the nostril. This is a place where all we were doing was letting kids back into comic conventions, not forcing anybody out. That's one. Two, there's going to be a lot of professional development, workshops for working cartoonists this year. I'm going to give you guys a scoop. And I'm going to tell you about some of the workshops I've been working on.
I do not know this. I can't wait to hear it. I'm going to have a hard time sitting at my table. I know.
First of all, we've got Underwater Tomato Ninja. I said it wrong. Where is it? Hold on a second. Dadgummit, I lost it. Here it is. Oh, it is Underwater Tomato Ninja. I said it right. Courage of my convictions. So first we're going to have that, but then, okay, so here's a few things that are happening at Kids Read Comics. Illustration workshop with Krishna Sadasivam. Heyo, he's going to be beaming in via Skype and to lead a workshop for us. Your webcomic from the ground up with Diana Nock. Now, Diana Nock is a cartoonist who did a book that everybody's been talking about called Portcraft with C. Spike Troutman. It's a comic that actually teaches you how to live on the cheap if you're a struggling cartoonist. You know, she does the Intrepid Girlbot .com. So she's going to be leading that for us. We've got a live episode of Comics Are Great. Live studio audience is going to be happening there. We're going to have a webcomics panel with Audra Ferrucci and Scott Yoshinaga of Nemu Nemu, Tony Cliff of DelilahDirk.com, and Josh Elder is going to be moderating that panel. We're going to have Inside the Writer's Room with Dan Mishkin, Rob Worley, Paul Story, and Jim Ottaviani, who are going to be talking about how to write visually. So it's for writers specifically, how to write a story and how a cartoon or a comic book writer has to think differently. We'd have working on a Blender workshop, making 3D objects in Blender for animation or for modeling for your comic. Color flatting with Gail Williams, Kelverin on the Twitters. Let's see what else we got here. How to draw Adventure Time characters with Chris Houghton, the cover artist of the Adventure Time comic books. So that's more of a fun one.
Jeez.
How to draw an Adobe Illustrator with Janie Ho. Janie Ho, the celebrated children's book illustrator, is going to do a full class. We're getting Adobe Illustrator installed in the computer lab. Or at least I'm crossing my fingers that this isn't, you know, settled for sure, but it's looking like we're going to be able to get Adobe Illustrator installed on the machines so you can learn how to draw in Adobe Illustrator with professional illustrator Janie Ho. And then there's going to be fun things like the Comics Quickfire event led by Dave Roman. Dave Roman did this really cool game show, improvisational drawing game at TCAF this past year, and he's bringing it to Kids Read Comics. And that's the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole lot of stuff going on here. So that's all at kidsreadcomics.org. We work very hard on this show. It is free to the public. The tables are free for the artists, although our artist alley is now, you know, filled. No, we're not accepting any more submissions. But it's a comic convention where every hour there's at least three different comics activities going on, free workshops for you to take, ranging from panel discussions, hands-on workshops, and then cool demos, like, you know, quick draw demos and things. 28 events on Saturday.
What's that?
28 events scheduled on Saturday.
28 events.
You couldn't possibly go to all of it.
That is really cool. I mean, just what a, that's a lot. That's an amazing amount of depth. I mean, what other place is there that kind of event? You know what I mean? Like at any price.
Yeah. Yeah. We're like, yeah, normally this would be a conference you'd have to pay for, right? You'd pay like a pretty substantial amount of money to be able to attend something like that. And yeah, like one of the things that I'm very, very proud of is the kind of cool casual walk-in events, like how to draw Adventure Time characters. Fun, right? But then, you know, across the hall, here's a workshop where you're going to learn the almost impenetrable program called Adobe Illustrator. That one guy who's listening right now who says, Adobe Illustrator is quite easy. Yes, I know. But for most people, it's a very strange and difficult program to use. I know you are very smart because you understand Adobe Illustrator, but the rest of us are very dumb and we need somebody awesome like Janie Ho to teach us how to use it. So, yeah.
That rocks. I mean, so, and that's, and I mean, it, any one of these classes, I mean, that the, there's a lot of strong things you listed. And I agree, Illustrator is an amazingly powerful app. Like I still can't, you know, even though I'm, you know, when I do get around to drawing comics lately, which I haven't done a lot of, unfortunately, I used Illustrator for as part of the process in generating assets for for Underwater Tomato Ninja, which you could easily transform into a space adventure or whatever the heck based on all the different crazy assets I made for it. But anyway, now Illustrator is amazingly powerful. That alone, like, just highlighting it, but Blender 3D, whatever. I mean, if you're anywhere near the area, it's worth your time. Like, what a kick butt weekend vacation. Anyway, that's what I'm doing.
Well, it's something that I dreamt of for many years. Not like I've been dreaming of Kids Read Comics for many years, but it's this kind of thing that I was wishing for. It's like, why don't cartoonists have a comics conference to go to where it's about sharpening up your skills? And then I simultaneously wondered, why aren't there conventions where it's explicitly stated that we want children here? We want kids to get excited about comics because they're the future and we need them to be hooked on the medium so we can live off of their money.
Yes.
It's a pragmatic thing, man. I'm not just doing it just to be a sweet guy. I want these kids to grow up, make some money, and give it to me. But you know, those things weren't, those problems weren't being addressed. So, you know, it's like we just did it ourselves. Although we weren't the first. I mean, Kids Comic Con by Alex Simmons. Alex Simmons, one of my heroes. I got to write his name down for the show notes. But yeah, he did the Kids Comic Con, which was what got me and Dan Mishkin to get the ball rolling with Edith Burney and Dan Merritt to get Kids Read Comics going. Anyway, this big commercial for Kids Read Comics is mostly because Rob's going to be there. He's leading a really cool workshop. You're going to be moderating a panel, a video, how to design video games panel, which is followed by your video game workshop. 1-2 punch, you know, people are going to be unconscious and toothless after you're through with them.
Which, you know, hopefully, I'll get bailed out of jail and then I can do my workshop.
But yeah, it's going to be a fun time. So people should come. And all the information is at kidsreadcomics.org. The programming at the time of this recording is not posted on the website, but it should be posted soon. I'm barreling through the final stages of getting all of my workshop descriptions in, submitted, and then I can start actually working on the printed program and post it on the site.
Super cool.
Okay, well, Rob, this was really, really fun. I felt like we were all over the map at times, but man, there was a lot of energy going on in this episode. And congratulations to you, sir. You deserve a Pepperidge Farm cake. Go get one of those frozen chocolate cakes. Knock yourself out.
Cool. Thank you, Jersey. Yeah, thanks. That's awesome. I am stoked about it. And thanks for the opportunity to do this. I mean, it's a lot of the incentive I can't wait to can't wait to do this at Kids Read Comics. And also, good news, bad news, you know, you're my guinea pigs. So,
and then afterwards, you can do it for Lean Into Art.
Yes.
.com. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We will be back with another episode in a week. Until then, I have been Jersey Drozd of ComicsAreGreat.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of Interactive-Storyteller.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.